Friday, Monza, Italy, Formula One, fantastic. What do you make of today's practice?
Oh, for a minute then I thought we were going to do the whole show in just words, one word at a time.
Single.
Not putting sentences together.
Uh-huh. Don't evade the subject. Sorry. What do you make of practice today?
Well, practice...
It was dry.
It was beautifully sunny compared to last week, which wasn't. Let's just leave it at that, really. Mm. Yeah, it was interesting. I think that, I've read up on it, but I didn't watch any of it.
Now, we must discuss this, actually. This is important discussion point number one, I think.
Okay.
Today, we made an executive decision to downscale our live event coverage from 3 individual practice sessions to the 1 encompassing practice session live thread. Not a massive change in the world of Formula One. It didn't exactly send shockwaves through the paddock, but it is important to us because what the impetus of this change was, not that many people are paying much attention to free practice this season.
No, we did this last season when we had 1 thread for every session, and then we decided to put all 3 into 1. But then we made the events really easy to do.
Mm.
I mean, it takes 5 minutes to put one together. That was the whole point of making it super simple. But even with the ease of it, it still doesn't seem worth having 3 separate ones.
It doesn't take us any effort now, but you still require some comments in the thread to make the thread purpose, you know, in life. Otherwise there's no point in having that thread. And bless Will, and I think there was one other person, was it Dreamland, name escaping then. I think Will and Dreamland were the only 2 people in the comments today. It was very, very quiet, despite the fact it wasn't raining and there was more than 4 laps going on. Not too many people were around, and it does seem excessive to have 1 thread per comment, which was sort of the way it was going today. I don't know why the fire has gone out of free practice.
Yeah, because the point here is not boohoo, we're having less comments. It's, that's interesting. Why is free practice less important to people these days? Now, I mean, there are lots of reasons. It's on a Friday. People work. I work. But then I was thinking, would I be watching it if I wasn't at work? If I had the day off and I was watching it, I don't know if I would. I might try and watch a little bit, but not enough to be dedicated in the comments, updating every single lap in a fact-by-fact box style.
Well, it's worth adding at this point, we have seen record numbers of comments in the qualifying threads and the race threads this year. So that there isn't a problem in terms of general popularity of Formula One or also podcast, you know, in itself. There are lots more people viewing, lots more people taking part. The fact-by-fact box is more popular than ever. But on Fridays, it is down. And you're right, in the past, I've made time at lunchtime when I'm at work or, you know, by taking days off to make sure that I catch the action on a Friday. This year, really not that bothered. Partly, there is the issue that we only get half the races. We only get to see half the races. So therefore, you only get to see half the practice sessions. And in the UK, this race happens to be covered by Sky. It's not free to air. And so that might be part of the problem. But still, it does feel like there's not there isn't the motivation or the desire to watch these sessions in case something important happens, because it so rarely does.
Will has said that the last 4 were rainy or even more rainy, which obviously doesn't make for good viewing.
Mm.
And Dreamland said tyre saving is the problem. But I don't think tyre saving is that extreme in practice, is it?
They should dispose of their Friday tyres. And Saturday would be a problem. But on Friday, they give them back to the Pirelli, or they used to.
Yeah, so and they all have the same amount. There's no advantage to be gained from saving.
You can't use a Friday tyre during a race, can you? So it's that shouldn't be a major issue. I think Will could be onto something with the fact that if you have so many rained off Friday sessions, you sort of just forget. You get out of the habit of it. It doesn't become... And also, don't forget, we've had such a long break. I mean, there was a race last weekend and there was a race this weekend. But prior to that, there was 5 races, 5 weekends effectively, no racing.
Yeah, I've forgotten how to do it.
People have just forgotten to turn up, maybe. Maybe that's the problem. But so for this race, for this weekend, we are down to 1 thread. I got some great...
But I was just going to say that I don't think it makes too much difference. I think it was also Will, because he was manning the free practice threads, said that actually it might be better that way because there are stories that overlap, like free practice 1 and free practice 2. They happen on the same day. You might be referencing things that are in the same thread. So actually, it might be better that way.
Interesting. Okay, that could work. I got some great suggestions and thoughts and feedback on Twitter. I didn't keep a record of them. Have you got a record of them?
Well, you're lucky I'm such a good secretary. I have a record of a few of them. Amy said she didn't watch any free practice last weekend and didn't feel like she'd missed anything. But then there wasn't much to miss, to be fair, last weekend.
Mm.
Maybe just that 1 hour. Michael said, you used to be able to tell the field in about thirds. Now it's meaningless to quali or race results.
This is because we get a mixed up season. And therefore, you don't know, even going into qualifying, who's going to be fast and who's going to be slow.
Yeah.
And therefore, there's no sense in watching on Friday and studying the performance of the
cars. It really is just watching cars going round and seeing what happens to them, but you can't really compare them to each other. That is interesting. Lisa said, there's too many races. I can just about swing 20 Saturdays and Sundays, but it's hard to add all the Fridays too. Also a good point. And Stuart finished up with, perhaps people are finally realising it doesn't warrant the attention that has been lavished upon it in recent years.
Okay, that I can't argue with that either, because
maybe we all built it up too much.
Mm. But we built it up because we enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And now it's not.
Maybe it was the novelty of the thing.
Because it was suddenly being broadcast on television and it hadn't been in the past.
Suddenly being broadcast, we could all suddenly talk about it together via Sci-Podcast or Twitter or whatever. And now it's not so much of a novelty anymore.
It took 3 years to wear off, but finally.
Maybe.
Finally we had enough.
Then again, maybe next year it'll all be different and it will be fantastic to watch free practice and everyone will be taking days off work to sit on their sofas and watch it. You just don't know with these things.
It definitely feels different this year. Definitely. And it's tailing off. It's feeling like, you know, at the start of the year it was more important and now it's less important to me as a concept. What I do like doing, coming home and watching the highlights on the television, catching up, which is what we did today. We came home from work and we caught up with free practice, and having watched the highlights and having described them in F1 Minute, what do you make of what happened?
Well, we talk a lot about how rubbish my memory is, and the one thing I always forget about Monza until we get there is that stupid slalomy bit where they miss the corner and they have to go through the chicane because they're not allowed to run straight down the track.
This is at the first corner. You don't like the means of slowing cars down and preventing them from cutting the corner.
I mean, I understand why it's there, and I don't know.
This does seem like an odd thing to object to me.
I don't know why. It just drives me absolutely crazy.
Do you have something against polystyrene in general?
I don't know what it is. I don't know. It's just because they look so stupid going weaving. Oh, I don't know.
Oh, okay. Alrighty. You don't. Yeah, fine. Well, that's kind of shows how nimble the cars are. You rarely get to see a car slalom.
That is true. Maybe if it was a bit longer and a bit more of an obstacle course, that would be more fun. But I don't know. Anyway,
downhill was a bit of a jump.
Alonso missed that one and he was like, I'm not having any of this slalom nonsense. He went on the grass and carried straight on. So he's my new hero.
Credit to him. Okay. So he just, the sign said go right, then left, and he went around a whole lot of it.
Yeah. I'm not having any of that. But he wasn't having a very good day. The car, I think, came to a halt at least once, maybe twice. Lots of gearbox and brake trouble.
It's an unusual amount of problems the guy had. I mean, you rarely see one team have so many issues in such a short space of time. But there was an engine issue, there was a brake issue, and there was a gearbox issue on that Ferrari all in one session. At one point, Massa was benched so they could check out his car, make sure there was nothing wrong with that on that side of the garage. Not quite sure what's going on. It's been a reliable chassis all season, and then suddenly they turn up at their home race, and it suddenly starts looking very Italian.
It has been reliable, and the gearbox is giving up today. But I do think that the gearboxes all over the place seem to be, this season, not as good. I don't know. Everyone seems to be getting gearbox penalties all the time. In Germany, Mark Webber and Nico Rosberg both got gearbox penalties, 5 places on the grid. In Belgium, Mark Webber and Nico Rosberg both got exactly the same penalties. What's that, 2 races later?
Is there that much development, innovation and time to be gained from working on gearboxes in Formula 1? Is this one of the only remaining areas for research and development to go on? Is that what's happening? Are people pushing the limits of the gearboxes? We know for a fact that Williams have an incredibly small gearbox because we've seen the back of the back end of the car is effectively missing. Are other teams looking at the Williams and going, actually, you know, they're pretty damn good. That gearbox is doing a really good job. It got Pastor Maldonado up to 3rd place on the grid before his penalty at the last Grand Prix. Maybe that's what it is. They're pushing the limits. I mean, Red Bull, we know, like to push every single regulation they can, stretch every regulation to its maximum. And Mercedes, they They brought a new gearbox. They redeveloped the gearbox mid-season. It was in Monaco. They brought new developments to that box. And
that hasn't worked well for them, has it?
It's not working at all well for them, no. Whether or not it's made them faster, I don't know. But it's certainly made them less reliable. It seems like an unusual place, an unusual part of the car to have so many issues so often, especially when it's a long life part that has to last for, what, 5 Grand Prix?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know where this is coming from, but you are correct.
And is it still true that they get 1 free gearbox change without getting a penalty? Because if that is true... I know it used to be like that. I can't remember if it is this year or not. But if it's still true, then there's even more that we probably don't know about.
Well, in the comments, Lukey said someone keeps nicking the cogs.
Oh.
Somebody definitely nicked 6th gear from Michael Schumacher in Spa.
Yes.
So I wouldn't be surprised if he has some more repercussions of that this coming weekend. Because, you know, if you finish the Grand Prix with one of your gears missing, the damage that you could potentially do to that box, you know, the numerous issues he could face in the next race.
Also, I noticed today in my truly observant style that there were 2 different new names in Free Practice 1.
And they were?
Jerome D'Ambrosio.
And?
And Ma Ching-wah.
You can say that. I heard you say...
Yeah, I'm not confident, but I'll give it a go.
F1 minute. Yes, okay, so Jerome then.
Yeah, he's there.
In which car?
He is in a Lotus.
Because?
Because Romain Grosjean is not in a Lotus this week.
Because
he crashed.
Because
he's stupid. Right? What do you want me to say?
To himself and others, I think, is the reason that he's not in that car.
Yep.
Talk to me then about your favourite driver causing all sorts of havoc in Belgium.
Yeah.
What do you make of that then, Christine?
Well, I make of it that he's slightly less my favourite driver, although they did show footage of him coming into the circuit today to watch, which breaks my heart. It does. Just coming in to sit at the sides and watch someone else drive your car because you ruined it. I think that the penalty is fair enough if it was quite dangerous driving, and it does make sense to ban him, but it just seems totally inconsistent with everything else. Because there are other drivers.
Other drivers? You can name them.
Well, I think everyone knows.
Go on.
Okay, there are other drivers like Pastor Maldonado who are crashing a lot as well. And who would, it's kind of the difference between just being stupid and being obnoxiously stupid.
Okay.
To my mind.
Romain Grosjean has...
But I don't begrudge the penalty because I understand why they've done it.
Yes. Well, Lotus don't begrudge the penalty because they didn't appeal. Romain didn't appeal. He says it will almost certainly make him a better driver. I think that in the pack... at the start of the race, when he's amongst a lot of other cars, Romain positions his chassis in a way that I think other drivers don't necessarily expect. I know that in Belgium he travelled the entire width of the start straight in one sweeping move, which is an aggressive aggressive manoeuvre and an unusual thing to do. When there are so many cars together, heading to the same corner at the same time, and I think if you watch back on some of his previous issues or previous accidents he's had in the opening laps of the Grand Prix, it's not that he's a particularly bad driver in the same way that Pastor Maldonado, you know, you question what he's actually doing. I just think that he's putting his car in places that other drivers wouldn't put their car, and he's doing it faster and more aggressively than perhaps he needs to, because you know a couple of times he's caught. A driver's back wheel or the back of the car, sent them, tipped them into a spin or given them a puncture this year, just because they're making their move and they're expecting other drivers to make certain moves, and the Romain isn't really fitting in with that mould,
yeah.
If that makes sense. You see what I'm saying?
I do. The BBC had a montage of all his first lap incidents, and everyone is making a big deal of how there have been 7 or 8 of them or 23 million of them, and there have been quite a lot, but a couple of them are just actually banging wheels with someone and bouncing off, and that happens all the time. And then a few of them have been questionable, and the one last week was terrible. But then, you know, Pastor, and I rag on him all the time, and it's not fair, but he is getting penalties all the time. And if you are constantly, isn't there a fact that he's only been not in the steward's office at one race?
This season.
I mean, how is that possible that they don't think to look at him and say, well, actually, of all the drivers that need a ban?
Well, it's good that the stewards have decided to draw a line in the sand. And they've made their point now. The trick that they have to pull off is to be consistent and stick with that. And if anybody else, whoever they may be, drives in a similar manner, they should get a similar penalty. Do you think that benching Romain will make him a better driver? Do you think it will make a difference?
I think it will make a difference because he seems like the kind of person that might learn from it.
Mm. Notably, drivers, previous drivers who have had a similar penalty, they include Mika Häkkinen, Schumacher, the controversial one, Teddy Turbine.
I have never heard that before.
He's had a penalty. So you've got, the list of drivers who have been set aside for at least one Grand Prix is numerous in years gone by, but hasn't happened for quite some time in our sort of, at least inside podcast history.
I think, because actually, it's a harsh penalty, not particularly in this instance, but as a penalty, taking a driver out of a race is quite a harsh thing to do. But it's not the end of the world. He'll come back, he'll be fine, it's all good. But I think it's just so shocking because of everything else we've seen this year and previously. And we haven't seen bans in such a long time. I mean, I don't remember the last time I saw a ban. Was it Button, maybe? And that wasn't even his fault? I don't know.
The Honda gearbox saga, you might be right, actually. Maybe the last time that two drivers... Yeah, I mean, that was Button and Takuma Sato were both taken out of two races. But yeah, I mean, it has been a long time. I think it's going to do him the world of good. And I suspect, actually, it's probably going to do Pastor the world of good. Because I think he's looking at that penalty thinking, well, I really don't want that to happen to me.
We can hope.
Yeah, I mean, all you can hope for, I think. I know you don't. I know you're not a fan of Pastor.
Really?
Maldonado. I can tell that.
I thought I'd kept that quite quiet.
I have to say, though, the guy did a brilliant job in qualifying in Belgium. I mean, you look at his teammate, Bruno Senna. Where did Bruno Senna finish in Belgium? Was it like 17th? Sorry, where did he start? Not where did he finish? Where did he start in Belgium?
I think it was 15th or something like that, yeah.
So the guy is he's barely scraping through to Q2 in a Williams chassis that Pastor Maldonado is proving to be capable of ending up in the top three. Now, Mr. Maldonado didn't keep that place because of a penalty that he brought on himself. But the car, the chassis, the man is driving that car on the ragged edge. And look what he's doing with that Williams. That's fantastic to see. And if it wasn't for him, we'd be looking at Bruno Senna and a teammate potentially driving around and finishing 16th and 17th. And we're going, yeah, that Williams is the same old Williams.
Yeah.
Nothing's changing. As bad as Pastor Maldonado is at finishing a race in the points without a penalty, he's really, 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 really good at driving that car damn fast.
Yeah.
And that is true. Have to give him credit for that. I really do. Because I love Williams. I really like Williams. I want them to do well. I want them to make a fast car and to be up mixing it with the top teams. And in qualifying in Belgium, in Pastor Maldonado's hands, that's what they were doing. And that's good to see. Will in the comments asked a question that I think you this might be one for you to tackle. Is the pace that Pastor Maldonado gets out of his Williams, is that similar to what Fernando Alonso drags out of that Ferrari, especially at the beginning of the season when the Ferrari wasn't very fast? I mean, Alonso got the absolute maximum out of what he had under him. And I'd say Pastor's, he's doing something similar to that Williams, isn't he?
Potentially, except for the small difference in that, was it not until this last race that Alonso had a massive string of points finishes and Maldonado had potential to get points but kept crashing away from it?
Yes. Fine. He's thrown, I mean, on the last lap in Australia, for example, he's thrown away plenty of points. But Fernando Alonso has many, many, many more races and years of experience.
Yes, that's true.
And who's to say
that? I don't know if they are
the
comparable, are they?
Yeah, I can see what Will's saying. What you're saying is you've got a car that's actually, whereas I'm suggesting that Pastor is driving the Williams to its limit, he's suggesting he's actually driving it beyond the limit, and the Williams isn't really a third placed car. It's just that Pastor has the ability to drag that much pace out of it, in the same way that the Ferrari isn't a championship leading car, but in Fernando Alonso's hands it is leading the championship, in Felipe Massa's hands it isn't.
Well, that is a similarity.
So
I will grant
you. Yeah, you've got that. You've got one team. I mean, there is a huge difference between the points of Fernando Alonso and Massa, and there was a huge difference between the places Pastor Maldonado and Bruno Senna in qualifying in Belgium. But actually, I think Senna is pretty damn close to Mr. Maldonado in terms of points in the championship.
Will would like to point out that it really pains him to have to ask the question in the first place. So.
I think we have been and will continue to be incredibly critical of a certain Williams driver's approach to Formula One. On the other hand, it doesn't mean we can't also appreciate what he is good at. It's all right to say, okay, he's terrible at this and he really needs to change his attitude, but that doesn't mean he's not also really, really fast. And if he could just, round off the edges of his driving aggression, that he couldn't become a pretty competitive package.
And we've seen that in many drivers before. Felipe Massa was mental until Rob managed to mould him into something championship worthy. Even Kamui Kobayashi used to have a reputation and now has managed to turn that reputation into something a little bit better.
What is much harder, much, much harder, and there may be less examples of this, is to take a driver who's not particularly fast and make them faster. And I think if you were Frank Williams and you were looking at Bruno Senna, I reckon you'd be questioning how you can make him quicker. Because we in Hungary, I recall saying, I think Bruno Senna's turned a corner. I think he's going to, I think the end of his season is going to be much better than the beginning of his season. And that didn't last more than a race. And that might be a problem. We'll see what he does this weekend. Maybe, he might be a Jensen Button, hot and cold, win a race, don't finish a race, win a race, come 15th. That could be Bruno Senna's season. Or it could be that he just isn't very fast.
Let's talk about a less controversial subject, a less controversial driver even, and that would be Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, good God. It's come to something when Lewis Hamilton is the least or is less controversial than other drivers on the grid. That man used to be Mr. Controversy.
Yes, we recently, I think, we praised how he had taken to Twitter with much gusto. He was taking pictures. He was doing a whole day in the life of me thing at the track, and it was brilliant. And then he said something perhaps a bit questionable, but didn't let it get him down, and he carried on. And that was good. That was commendable. But now it seems that on the Twitter and things, he's gone rogue. Let's be honest about it.
Rogue in the sense that it's not very McLaren-esque. Is that what you mean?
Let's be honest about it.
I mean, he's not going around killing people, is he? It's not that kind of rogue. It's not Hollywood rogue.
It's Twitter rogue. If anyone else in the team had posted telemetry, they would have been fired. Unless it was Martin Whitmarsh or someone.
If Jensen Button did, he wouldn't have been fired.
Really?
Yeah, they wouldn't fire Jensen Button for that.
I don't think Jensen would. Because he doesn't seem the type to be like, I'm doing everything I can. It's just the car. I am just as good as my teammate. Promise.
So, okay, but backtrack 1 second.
But I'm writing.
Prior to Lewis Hamilton tweeting his telemetry, which incidentally he did very kindly for us as we were live during the recent parade lap, which was great of Lewis to think of us and give us something to discuss. But prior to that, it felt like the guy's going through some contract negotiations for his future at McLaren, and it's been ongoing. They've been very long and very drawn out, and I think we've been talking about it for almost the whole of this season. He's due for... his contract is up for renewal. He needs to know where he's going in his future. He needs to know where he's going to be. He wants to be in a team that helps him win championships. He's good enough. We know he's good enough to win world championships. He's one of the best drivers on the grid. He should be in a team that can give him the best shot at a title. McLaren are one of those teams, but there are others, potential options for him. There is a sticking point, I think, with McLaren's insistence that Lewis or that any of their drivers don't keep their original trophies that they win. They get copies and McLaren put them in a bunker.
I think
it's a great idea, actually, because, if you're a driver, you just put them in your house or whatever. They're not very secure. You're going to move house. You're going to drop them. Drivers in the past have used them as doorstops. There's not a lot of care and attention lavished on trophies from a driver's point of view, particularly. Each one differs, but generally, in the past, there have been maybe some less care given to such things. McLaren absolutely will take the very best care. It will probably be in a dust-free environment. They will be cleaned daily. You know, it will be fantastic. They will be looked after. They will be cared for. And the drivers get an identical copy. So essentially, you can't really tell the difference. Anyway, it's made by the same people who make them. On top of that, most Formula One trophies these days look like the Santander logo.
You've seen one and seen them all.
Seen them all. Who gives a damn anyway? Look, from Lewis's point of view, Olympians get to keep their gold medals. Why shouldn't he keep his championship trophies? McLaren, that's not an option to McLaren. And it's something that he feels is, you know, personally important to him. Doesn't seem to bother. Jensen hasn't bothered previous drivers. So if that really is an issue, then I'm not entirely sure how that's going to get resolved other than by moving to another team.
Yeah. I can't see him at another team, though. He's just so McLaren and always has been.
But he isn't. He's gone rogue.
But he has gone rogue.
In the last 2 weeks, he really hasn't been so McLaren.
No.
He's been tweeting some slightly rude phrases. You know, the things that if your team are making a cartoon aimed at children and you're in that cartoon and you're being marketed to the next generation of Formula One fans, you possibly don't want to go tweeting some of the phrases that Lewis Hamilton has been tweeting in his past 2 weeks. It's very non-McLaren. And I'm thinking, from what he's tweeting, that he doesn't particularly care if the team don't appreciate him as much as they used to. Because maybe he might be going somewhere else. He doesn't sound like, he doesn't tweet as though he's a driver who's happy where he is and is planning to stay there, does he?
It's hard to say. Was it on that parade lap where it was Giggles that was saying that he's saying this is me, this is how I am, and so if we are going to do a deal, you're going to have to take me or leave me like I am, which is an interesting idea. But the thing I hadn't particularly thought about in this, there's been lots of talk about where he could go. He couldn't really be at Ferrari next to Alonso. That would be amazing. There's talk about him going to Mercedes, but I personally can't really see that happening. But if he did leave, there would be a nice Lewis-shaped hole at McLaren.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who would fill it.
Alonso.
I had never thought of it.
Alonso,
wouldn't go back to McLaren in a thousand years.
No, he wouldn't. Not at all. Okay. Well, first, let's do that. Lewis Hamilton has left McLaren. Who's going to fill that void? Who's going to be Jenson Button's teammate?
Everyone's been saying where Hamilton would go.
Already I'm predicting a comment from Lukey.
Yeah.
No, not him.
That's not
Let's
happen.
Not bring him back.
Yeah, everyone's been saying where Hamilton is going to go, but I'd never considered what would be left behind. Who'd be a good teammate for Button? They've been such good teammates, and they do make such a good team until this information was shared that might have ruined it a little bit. I hadn't considered.
My question would be, I guess, if Lewis Hamilton ends up at Mercedes, which I think would be the best solution for Lewis, where would either Nico Hülkenberg or Paul di Resta go? Because at the moment, they are both competing in Force India with an eye on Michael Schumacher's seat when Michael Schumacher leaves. Right?
Yeah.
So that both of those drivers, that's going to mess with their potential future. You've got a seat. If Lewis Hamilton can't go to Ferrari because you can't match up Alonso and Lewis Hamilton,
oh, I wish he could.
You've still got the potential that Massa may not be there, so you can either have di Resta or Hulk at Ferrari, or one of them could go to McLaren. So there's a lot of musical chairs to be moved around. If Lewis Hamilton makes that move, obviously if Lewis Hamilton goes to Mercedes, that's the end of Michael Schumacher. That's worth bearing in mind. There's an awful lot of things to be shifted around. The most important quote I've read in the past week, I think, is from Ross Brawn, who noted that, forget next year, is going to be much like this year in terms of the pecking order, who's where, what's going on, etc.
Team-wise.
Yeah. Performance-wise, whatever. Yeah. What you want to keep an eye on, and what drivers who are signing long-term career contracts will definitely be keeping an eye on, is what happens in 2014, when Formula One moves to a new engine formula, which will favour manufacturers who build engines. That's going to be worth keeping in mind. So you've got Renault,
Mercedes,
and Ferrari. Really, they're the threat. They're the main ones. There could be more. More could come into the sport, but those teams are going to have an advantage that maybe McLaren, who don't build their own engine, won't. You know, McLaren may not have that advantage because they are effectively a customer team. And Lewis might want to keep that in mind. So I think Ross Brawn could be onto something. He could be, you know, Lewis to Mercedes might have some logic to it if you were looking very long term. If you're looking short term, doesn't make a lot of sense. But longer term, the order is going to be shaken up as new rules and regulations come in.
So the real question is, how long term can Lewis look?
Mm. Well, it has to be very long term. Or you think he might take a 1-year deal with somebody and then move somewhere else?
I don't think anything, but I love it. You know, what I find interesting is that in previous seasons, I've been like, oh, this silly season. It's fascinating up to a point and then just, oh, shut up about it. I don't want to know. But this year, I'm really into it. Like, oh, who could go where? This could be really exciting. And actually, I don't think any of it's going to happen. I think Lewis is going to stay at McLaren and no one's going to move. But
hold on then.
I really
hold
like
on,
the...
Even that statement is a loaded statement.
Oh.
If
it wasn't
you think Lewis
be.
Hamilton is going to stay at McLaren, how long do you think he's going to stay there for?
Well, I don't know.
12 months?
No.
3 years? 4 years?
I don't know, but I do like, I think it's better when drivers have just 1-year contracts because then it makes each silly season more interesting instead of these people that sign up for 7 years and you've got to wait 7 years before anything happens.
What's unusual, I think.
Webber's got the right idea.
Webber's got the right idea.
I didn't think I'd say that today.
That's a first. Webber has no choice. Mostly with his 1-year contract. Red Bull says, do you want to stay for a year? Yeah. Do you want to stay for a year?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not him having the right idea at all. It's the only thing that's been offered to him. What's interesting from a side podcast point of view is this is the first time, perhaps since we started, that Fernando Alonso isn't the key to the silly season. Normally it's where's Fernando going to go and then everybody else will move around.
Now it is. I thought it was Alonso up until, wasn't it Kubica? Last year?
I don't think it was Kubica, was it?
Oh, I thought there was a year where it wasn't Alonso, but it has been him dominating
recently. For the first time, it is Lewis Hamilton who is the centrepiece of it all. And we shall see where he goes.
Davin has commented, Lewis is tweeting telemetry on Twitter. How is that thinking long term? Which is a very good question.
If you were another team and you were keeping an eye on Twitter, and the thing with Lewis's tweeting of this telemetry, it was the event that took Twitter mainstream in Formula One. In IndyCar and in NASCAR, you've had drivers taking pictures whilst driving and taking shots from the scene of an accident and things like that. They were the breakout moments of social media in those series. In Formula One, it was Lewis Hamilton giving away his team secrets via a social media site. That was the thing that, you know, that was the thing where Christian Horner went, hold on a second, I'm going to have to check Twitter.
Yeah.
Even, you know, that was the point when everybody in the paddock who wasn't on the social network went and found somebody who was very quickly. Interestingly enough, I'm not entirely sure that because it was McLaren, and because McLaren have this fantastic race control live system that they use and have used for the last, I think, at least 3 years, an awful lot of that information is available on the internet to anybody who's interested in real time as the cars are going around. And if rival teams aren't already consuming that McLaren data and making their own graphs and their own analysis, there's something very amiss with rival teams in Formula 1, because that's a great opportunity to capture that data. And I suspect because it was McLaren, actually Lewis probably didn't give very much data away at all. But if you were thinking of employing him, you might look at that and go, I wouldn't want that to happen to my team.
Yeah, I mean, Christian Horner said he'd had a good look at it. I mean, he was probably joking a little bit, but, you know, I'm sure they all did look at it closely.
You'd be crazy not to at least give it the quick once over. The only person I think who lost out from all of that was Jenson Button, because essentially what Lewis was saying by tweeting it was, he's not as fast as you think he is really. It's all down to the car. And if I was Jenson Button, I'd be a bit miffed, but because, you know, he chose the right wing at the right time, and he drove the car to pole position. And I'd be quite miffed if somebody put a tweet out that said, actually, it ain't you, mate.
Yeah, but I don't think he was that miffed for that long, because he did win the race and Lewis Hamilton did not get a chance to do anything in the race. So in the end, karma will get you, I guess. I would like to change the subject completely now and actually rewind to before the Belgian Grand Prix, because there was a brief bit of news. It didn't last very long. It wasn't particularly interesting, but I wanted to bring it up because...
Sounds like a great subject.
Yeah,
it wasn't very long and it wasn't very interesting.
This is my...
Also, it was ages ago.
Okay, fine. Manicor said they're going to host a young driver test this month. But I don't like it. There are too many of these now. We've already had one. There's another one coming up. Now there's another one.
I
don't want them all. Why can't they all just go to one place?
Hold on, though. Isn't it good that the action is being spread out?
No. I don't like just one or two drivers. It's pointless.
You'd rather all the teams turned up in Abu Dhabi, miles away from anywhere, did a bunch of testing that nobody could track, and then vanished.
I'd rather that they were all at the same place, mm-hmm. and then I would be able to keep track of what's going on. The last one, it happened, and I barely even knew it was on, because there's only one or two teams there. No one knows, no one notices. It's too hard.
So the last young driver test, was it Silverstone?
There were three, and then was it HRT went home, so there were only two on the last day.
Correct.
And they only have like one driver at a time, and it's just, I just can't keep up with it. I don't like them being split up.
The advantage to the teams being split up is that one rogue driver causing a red flag doesn't inhibit everybody's day.
That's the one
advantage. I quite like the idea of Manny Kaur just popping up out of nowhere, because that's obviously been off the radar for some time, and as yet doesn't, there isn't a French Grand Prix, and it has nothing to do with Formula One at the moment. So bringing Manny Kaur back, even in the most tenuous way, is quite interesting.
That is the good news of it. I think they certainly want F1 back, because they made a big point of saying they had been homologated for another 4 years, and we want to show off our best side to all the F1 personnel that turn up.
It's news to me that Manny Kaur has a best side.
Yeah.
It's a bit and flat.
It's not going to be that many F1 personnel turning up, because they're all going to Abu Dhabi.
Well,
not all of them.
Who is left? How many teams are going to Manny Kaur? Is it two more teams?
I think
three?
It was three. I can't remember it exactly, because like I said, it was a while ago. It was like Red Bull. And
that leaves you, what, six teams in Abu Dhabi?
Yeah, I just don't like it.
I don't agree with your reasons for not liking it, I have to say. I think I disagree with your reasoning.
I think I just like it to be more of an event. Because, you know, in previous years, it's been like an event, this young driver test. We've looked at who all the young drivers are, and then next season it's like, oh yes, they were there and they were there. When it's all spread out, I can't do massive who are they anyway posts with who all these drivers are, and it just doesn't work as well for me.
It's much harder to pitch drivers against each other, because you couldn't say, for example, this Williams, you know, the driver in the Williams compared well against the driver in the Lotus, because potentially they happen at two different events on two different days at two different times of the year. There's more risk involved, because the Silverstone test could have been a washout for everybody who gambled on running there. Luckily, they had some reasonable weather and got a lot of miles in, so that was okay. There's nothing to say that it won't rain in Manny Kaur. I think your odds on it's going to be okay in Abu Dhabi.
If it rains, can they just say, no, we didn't want to go there anyway. We were always going to go to Abu Dhabi.
No. But from a financial point of view, if you're looking to cut costs and save money, and your trucks are driving from Italy past Manny Kaur, why not just stop off and have a bit of a run?
Fine, but can't they all stop off at the same time?
Well, no, because Troy already ran at Silverstone.
Well, they ruined it.
And other teams don't want to take... I imagine the holdout teams actually just want to run at Abu Dhabi because it's known. They've got good data. They know it will be dry. The cars will be... Will they be there? Where does the season end? The season ends in Brazil. The cars have got to go back there.
Yeah.
So, okay, that costs more money to go to Abu Dhabi, but you're guaranteed it's not going to rain there. It's never going to rain there. You've got perfectly good facilities. It's a new track. It's great tarmac. I don't see any reason, you know, there's no bad downside to running except for costs in Abu Dhabi. If the Silverstone test had been better publicised, people could have gone to it. That would have been nice.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like French fans can go to Manny Kaur unless I've missed something. I haven't seen any announcement or tickets or any kind of promotion. It's like a low-cost solution for fans to see Formula One cars. Grand Prix are notoriously expensive. Testing is much more affordable. And I think testing should be promoted as a fan-friendly event. And they seem to have missed that opportunity completely. Maybe the teams just don't get that at all.
It should be even more affordable if you're seeing drivers that you've never heard of, but their potential for the future. It's always fun looking back now and saying, oh, we saw them then and they were brand new.
Well, that's why people like GP2.
Yeah.
I know this is going to come as a shock to you. If you're into like young drivers and up and coming teams and that kind of thing, and if you've got time for more motorsport in your life, then
I think it's probably not to that extent. I like looking, once a year, one test,
You can cope a couple with of young drivers. This is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can cope with young drivers for 3 days a year.
Yeah.
And the rest of the time you just care about Formula One.
Yeah. I think that all we have left to talk about is what's going to happen this weekend.
And what do you suppose that might be?
Well, it's supposed to be sunny all weekend, so that's good. No rain getting in the way of things. And that's it. That's all I know.
And dare you give us a prediction as to who may or may not do well?
No.
No.
Well, I can't predict anymore. I can't take the guilt.
Of jinxing another driver?
Yeah.
And in Belgium, you predicted Fernando Alonso and he lasted less than a corner.
I know. You don't have to remind me.
So, this weekend, you're going to abstain? That doesn't make for very good audio.
Oh, I mean, I can make a prediction. I have made a prediction at work. But I think maybe if I don't say it, nothing bad will happen.
I think that's nonsense. Tell us who you predicted.
Button.
Why?
Because he looked really on form. And I think at another high-speed circuit, he might be able to do well.
Okay. That's vaguely logical for you.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can argue against that. I suspect that with Jerome in the seat and Kimi having failed to impress in Belgium, I think Lotus are out of the hunt. I know that Kimi was throwing that car over the curbs today. It's not handling very well.
He did have a bit of an airborne incident.
He also damaged the car earlier in the day too, on curbs, because I just don't think he's riding the circuit at all well. So they are probably out of it. Mercedes were looking pretty hot, but we've discussed previously their gearbox issues. They're probably not going to last the whole race, despite the fact they think they might. That doesn't leave very many people other than Red Bull and Ferrari. And McLaren. So let's go with, I think Red Bull...
That doesn't leave very many people apart from this one and this one and this one. Oh, and them as well.
They sort of came back to me. Well, we can discount Massa. So yeah. I shouldn't have said Ferrari. Easy. That really is Red Bull and McLaren and Alonso.
Okay.
Home circuit for Alonso, but his car was falling to pieces today. So let's knock him out for the count. You've then got two Red Bull drivers and two McLaren drivers. I think Lewis's head is elsewhere. I don't think Jenson Button can repeat his performance last week. It's either going to be Vettel or Webber, and I pick Vettel. Because okay. In the race, I think, aside from Hulk, Vettel was the driver who impressed me the most. He sided his way through the field. Both he and Mark Webber had fast cars. Vettel passed Webber on track and many more people. I think he did a great job. He did, put in a great
good
race.
Overtaking.
Yep, mm-hmm. Really, really good passing for him.
From both sides, being very respectful of each other. Red Bull drivers not known to like each other.
No, I think Mark knew he was beaten. I think that was a strong race from Sebastian. He's in the hunt for the title against Alonso. I think he's a danger man. My money is on Sebastian. May not get pole. Think you could be right. Could be a McLaren driver who's going to be faster over one lap. But in the race, it will be strategy and positioning that make it a Red Bull victory and one that they'll savour on Ferrari's home ground.
Jordan says, come on now, Vettel can win at Monza in a Toro Rosso. So you've got to be on for a winner there.
Yeah.
There was a moment because Michael Schumacher was fastest in free practice one today. And there was a moment where I was looking at that thinking, it'd be quite fun if he won here at the Italian Grand Prix, which is Ferrari's home race. I don't think they would be too happy about that.
Well, they must still have some love for Michael Schumacher, for all the wins and everything he did for the team. They wouldn't have forgotten that. They wouldn't, you know, if he took the win off Fernando, yeah, that's gonna blot his copybook a bit. Michael Schumacher, he must have a head full of retirement plans. I don't think he's got the...
Well, now I've seen all the gearbox issues they're having. Yeah. That's gone right out the window.
He's fast today. I think we can discount that. They could be okay. They could be decent in qualifying over one lap. But I don't think they've got the race pace to make a stack up. I mean, Michael Schumacher, in Belgium, he was like... Was he challenging Hulk for second? At one point, he was looking great. And then the car just went backwards and backwards and backwards, as it always does in Grand Prix.
There have been some predictions and things in the comments. Davin said, so Christine is predicting sunshine, so the entire race is going to be rained out and we don't get to see it. Yeah, that could happen. That really could happen.
I think your weather prediction is probably the only thing you'll get right this weekend. But we'll see. Because, you know, annoyingly, people will listen to the show after the race has happened and pick us up on all sorts of points which we couldn't possibly know. And I know that people will be listening to this on Monday going, yeah, you were wrong, Mr. C, right there. Everything you said
there,
complete nonsense.
Can't believe you said
that. Yeah, that's going to come back and bite me, but we shall see.
Mark said Vettel for pole. Lukey said Charles picked to win, which I don't think is serious. Dan reckons that Maldonado is going to crash with... likely to be with D'Ambrosio. That wouldn't be very nice, would it?
It wouldn't be very nice, but not very nice things happen in Formula One. Like, you know, I don't know, Sauber qualifying where they did and then not getting past corner one.
That's true. Yes, sometimes it's bad. Ryan says he predicts that Sauber will be massively underwhelming. You know, sometimes I think he isn't Sauber's biggest fan.
Oh, I don't know. Stephen says he predicts a riot, and I cannot argue with that logic. If you're watching the race live this weekend, be sure to come along to Side Podcast. Check out the live comments, join in the fun. It is the place to catch up with a race. You wouldn't want to be without the community during a Grand Prix event.
You know what else is on the site? If you happen to be passing by over the weekend or perhaps after the race when you're at a bit of a loss, because hey, it's not back-to-back racing after this. You've got a whole fortnight to fill. What are you going to do?
What am I going to do?
You can check out the features. Now, I think we talk about this every show, but they are so good. It's just, it would be a crime if you haven't looked at the features page recently. And we're getting great columns all about potential drivers in the future, the path for drivers going through the field, what's happening in the middle of the field. It's just, it's amazing. There's topics on everything and there's always more coming. So keep checking back.